Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the...
Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 228 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes, search Locked On Thunder, subscribe to the podcast there. You can leave a review if you're feeling really generous. The reviews really do help. You can leave a review, give 5 stars on iTunes, all that stuff. You can find us on audioboom.com too. You can log on to normantranscript.com. You can check out my blog there, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site, or you can just do normantranscript.com/sports/Thunder Road and check out all that stuff there. You can find it on my Twitter or whatnot and see all my Thunder coverage and whatever else we're doing at the paper. I've been doing Monday, Wednesday, Friday throughout the summer. And as I said last week, it's now going to Tuesday, Thursday, because this is the quite dry period. But nobody told the Thunder that this period was dry, because there's still somehow like gossipy Thunder news going on right now. And here to talk about it is a man who was so modest, he decided to name a podcast after himself, Nate Duncan. Nate, how you doing?
Is this my first time on Locked On Thunder? That can't be right.
I think it actually is. I've gone on yours.
I could have sworn we did something. Yeah, no, of course you have. And hopefully you will be, I can invite you on right now, actually, for the Thunder preview, which will be a very, very interesting one, no doubt. But no, you're not going to get a dry period when there's Thunder, that's for sure.
Oh my goodness.
That's actually news. My terrible.
It's just news every second. It's amazing. Was that a pun? Was that an intentional pun, by the way?
Well, only inspired by Thunder Road and also thunderous irony, as your story about Ronnie Price in the Norman
Thunderous
Transcript
Thunderous
morning.
Paradox, my friend. Thunderous Paradox.
Oh, I'm very sorry. It was a thunderous irony that in attempting to say Thunderous Paradox, I instead said Thunderous Irony.
So I assume most of my listeners, Nate, know who you are, but Nate is the host of the Dunked On Podcast. Great, great podcast where they just, it is like as fantastic for basketball nerds and even casual fans, even though you and Danny and whoever else is on there get super specific about stuff. And, you know, obviously get into the nerdiest parts of, you know, team building and X's and O's and all that stuff. But that's a great podcast, and you can check that out wherever you're listening to Locked On Thunder. You'll be able to find that there. So what we're talking about now, which we're alluding to with all of our Thunder puns right now, is Carmelo Anthony, who Bill Simmons said, you know, I'm just going to read the tweet, which I so professionally don't have called up right now. And I am going to just read the actual Simmons tweet with Melo, where Melo and the Thunder have a scoop. OKC and Carmelo are officially circling each other. OKC's Troy Weaver recruited Melo to Q's and has known him since DMV days. So Nate, for the first, you see that tweet, what's the first thing you think?
Well, just what's the matching salary going to be is number one for the Thunder. And number two is just the same thing we've been dealing with Melo for all these teams, is really this idea of how much is he actually worth as a basketball player? How much does he actually help you win versus how much he's being paid? And then how much the Knicks are going to expect back in return as well. And I think it's even now that he's apparently is willing to consider waiving the no trade, that the report has been he's willing to do that for Cleveland or Houston and perhaps OKC as well, if it can't work out with Houston, finding a juxtaposition for all of those factors could prove difficult.
His entire trade market is so fascinating, because the places he wants to go, none of the pieces really make sense from a Knicks perspective. I mean, they don't want to take back a Ryan Anderson contract if we're talking about Houston. But Houston's it's really hard to find a deal that makes sense for Houston without them giving up Ryan Anderson. And Cleveland, I just can't really think of anything that really makes sense there. And if there was something that really made sense, then the Knicks in Cleveland probably would have had a lot more traction than they had, which is by all reports and by all accounts, really none. And, you know, I was wondering about salary too. And the top three salaries on the Thunder for next season are Russ and then Adams and then Paul George. And there's no conceivable way that they're giving up any of those guys in their Carmelo trade. So it takes you down next to Cantor. And then they have a bunch of smaller salaries after that. And really the only way they can match salaries is if they include that, you know, Cantor's $18 million salary for next year. And who knows if the Knicks want that because he's got a player option, which he could very well pick up in 2018.
I mean, the odds of that are high, right, at this point, seeing the center market this year?
I would assume so, yeah.
I think maybe like two or three centers got more guaranteed over their entire contracts this offseason than Cantor would be due in 2018-19.
Are you including Powell in that?
Yeah, I mean, he and Felicio, I think, might be the only ones just like pure centers.
Yeah, you're right, because Deadman got less. Mason Plumlee is still a straggler. Yeah, yeah. Mason Plumlee is a hanging chad right now.
This is what I wanted to ask you. I mean, for Carmelo, now that I'm starting to get into it, let's just say, you know, you didn't have to give up anything on your, you know, there wasn't the issue of mashing salary, say. Carmelo due $27 million basically each of the next two seasons. So how much would you give up just in terms of your own assets just to have him on your team at that price, age 33 and age 34 seasons? Is that one first-round pick? Is it two first-round picks? Like, what, or is it, you know, a first-round pick and an okay, like, you know, backup player? Like, where does he fall just in terms of what he's worth on the trade market, regardless of this whole no trade or matching salary or anything else?
Yeah, well, like the complication, part of the complication from the Thunder side is that the earliest pick that they can trade is 2022. And it could be, probably won't, but it could be later than that if something goes horribly wrong this year and the Utah pick, which is lottery protected in 2018, has to roll over or something, and then that makes the Philadelphia pick in 2020. You know, go back to. So the earliest pick that they can trade is 2022. So that makes it a lot less desirable for them. You know, they have the Chicago second round pick for 2018, which is unprotected, which is a pretty decent pick. Like, I think you can argue that might be better. Like, I think you can make a really good argument that like pick number 34 is better than pick number 28. Or 32, or whatever that Chicago pick might end up being. Like, if that's top five in the second round, like, I think there are teams out there who would much rather have a guy in a second round contract than have a late first rounder on a rookie scale deal. And that's going to be an attractive pick too. So I don't know if that could stand in as like something as like it's a second round pick, but a pretty damn good second round pick, and it's near in the future. I mean, I would happily include that, which shouldn't sound like a bold statement. It's not intended to.
No.
But if I'm in the Thunder's position, like if you're
let's look at it from the Knicks position for a second. That's more interesting. Like what do you have a right to expect back for this guy? If you could just get pure cap relief, would that even be enough? I mean, because I don't think he's a $27 million player these next 2 years.
No.
But he's still a guy who can help you. I think. Especially if you still need some scoring, but he's on the downside. He's an injury risk, doesn't really get to the rim anymore. Still an excellent shooter, defensive liability. So all of those things are true. So maybe if you're being realistic as New York, maybe all you can hope to get back is salary relief, right? And then maybe it becomes an issue of, all right, now we have to, but maybe they don't see it that way. You know, maybe they feel like, hey, if all we can get back is salary relief, let's just hold on to the guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think if they can get salary relief and a pick on top of that, they've got to be happy with the way that the market is going. Like for him, I mean, first of all, granted, it's a different guy in charge now with Phil not there. They've got Scott Perry and they promoted Steve Mills. But like, they did themselves no favors by talking down Melo's trade value for the past year. I mean, that's complete insanity, which has been covered over and over and over again. And, you know, giving him the trade, no trade clause, just really hurts that value. If they can get back cap relief and a pick, I'd be ecstatic if I were the Knicks. I mean, then they at least get some flexibility. They're going to struggle cap-wise just because of the Noah and the Hardaway deals, which are combined, like, what, 35-ish, $36 million in 2018 or something like that. So yes. so that's going to bog them down no matter what. We talk about, like, one thing that kind of bothers me nowadays is that with the cap so high, a lot of people say, well, you know, it's a high cap. You just have to get used to the salaries. And that's true with a lot of people. But I don't like that argument because it implies that there aren't bad contracts anymore. And, oh, there are some bad contracts in the league right now. Like, after 2016, there are some really, really bad contracts. And Noah is one of those 2016 bad contracts. And Hardaway is like a he's a solid player. He had a good year in Atlanta last year, but that's a massive overpay. And those are going to bog down their cap for a little bit. So if they can clear up space in 2018, I think they got to be excited about that. And you know what? If they can't do it, just hold on to him, man. You can tank with Carmelo Anthony on your team. Maybe you can't tank into the top three, but you can still be good enough to get a decent draft pick and try to build from there.
Certainly difficult to imagine that they will be better than they were last year.
Yeah.
Unless Porzingis just goes completely crazy this season.
Right, which is certainly possible. I mean, he's really talented.
From the Knicks' perspective, if they were able to move Carmelo and not take salary back, they could open up about $25 million in space this season if they wanted to take on some bad contracts. That's not exactly what New York is known for doing. Or they could have about $34 million in space, maybe less than that. I guess I don't have Ron Baker in here yet. So probably about $30 million in space next summer. And then we assume that he's going to pick up that option. He has a player option on the last year. So that's
going to expire. Are we totally sure? It's an ETO, right? Are we totally sure that he's not going to opt out? I mean, I realize that in this market, he is not going to get $28 million a year. Like, there's no way his average annual value is going to be close to that on his next contract if he opts out next summer. But isn't it totally possible that someone his age, if he plays out the market, and granted, this summer nobody could get a long-term deal, but if he finds that someone will give you 3 years and you're not going to make as much money, but you're going to be locked in for 3 years and he's going to be 34 years old, like, isn't it totally possible that he's going to want to opt for years over the immediate payday?
Yeah, it's possible, though we have seen that guys who have tried to do that of late haven't really been able to do that well, like Rudy Gay, a perfect example of that. Opting out to try and get more years, maybe at a lower annual value. But no, it's possible. But I think if you're trading for him, if you're New York, you got to go with the assumption that he's going to opt in and treat it as a pleasant surprise if he opts out. If you're New York, if you're trading for him and you're Oklahoma City, I mean, maybe that's if he gets traded somewhere where he wants to stay, if it's Oklahoma City, if he does in fact want to stay there, or Houston, then maybe he opts out and does exactly what you're saying. Because he wants to stay there. If he wants to leave New York, then maybe he opts out and just leaves, or he opts in because he hates New York and he wants to just keep his money, and then he can get his money and be a free agent the next year. We've seen really for New York, you know, all right, if you could get a pick and salary relief, but then, you know, you're going to have for them to get salary relief, then a third team that has cap space has to be brought in. And now you're talking about whatever team, Oklahoma City in this case, has to pay the team that's taking probably Enes Kanter in this case, has to pay them to take Kanter. Maybe not a ton, but they have to pay some. Kanter is productive-ish, but, you know, he's probably maybe a $8 or $9 million a year player if he'd been on the market this year, maybe even less than that. So he's got a lot of dead money there. And then you also have to pay New York with an asset for the price of getting Carmelo Anthony. And that's where I think it really becomes difficult. Kanter is more desirable than Ryan Anderson, who the Rockets were trying to get off of. So it's maybe an easier job for OKC. And then also, though, keep in mind that OKC is already in the tax. And so they would also have to offload some other money in addition to Kanter. I mean, they can't just trade out the minimum amount of money to get back Carmelo unless they want to pay way more in tax. So there's also that issue as well. And so then maybe it would have to be Roberson who would be on the move, but he can't be traded until December 15th.
Right.
He can't be traded. It depends what raises they gave him. He might not be able to be traded until January 15th even.
You can also, I mean, to save a little bit of money, you can save about $3 million if you stretch Singler too.
Yeah, no, maybe that would be it, or maybe they would have to move on from Singler as well, and then the price gets higher there. So, yeah, and Roberson, yeah, they're over the cap, so they re-signed him with full bird rights, and so he wouldn't be able to be moved until January 15th. And Cantor, I mean, if you're trading one of these cap-space teams, I mean, you're not winning. He's not really a winning player, a young player that you expect to be a part of the foundation. So he's going to kind of just flounder there. He'll probably be annoyed the way he was in Utah. And then you got him for another year as well. So if any of those teams wanted to use space, I mean, it's going to take, you know, a fair amount in terms of resources. And you mentioned their issue with the pick. So all of this, what this says to me, it would be very, very difficult without moving Westbrook, George, or Adams, and then Roberson can't be traded either. And now everyone else on the team is making under $5 million. I mean, maybe you could say, all right, we're going to put in Abrines and Singler and Doug McDermott and just do everything that we can. But even then, you're still probably – I mean, maybe that would be part of it too. You could say, hey, if you take Cantor, we'll give you Abrines and we'll give you McDermott. You know, maybe that's how you sweeten it when you don't have the picks.
Right. Well, here's the Thunder's best chance to acquire him, operating under the assumption that they want to acquire him and that Melo will waive his no-trade clause to come to Oklahoma City if they could acquire him. The Thunder's best chance to acquire him is the exact same as what their best chance was to acquire Paul George, which was the Knicks just have to like their assets more than the rest of the league on average likes their assets. Like, the Knicks have to like Doug McDermott or like Alex Abrines more than the average, or like Jeremy Grant more than the average person around the league does. And, you know, it's not, I would say it's certainly unlikely. There's no question that's unlikely. But it worked in the Paul George deal. You know, Indiana, for whatever reason, like, you know, ESPN did some great work in reporting that Kyrie Irving and kind of linked it to a Paul George story a couple of days ago, and that was Winhorst, the McMenamin, and Ramona Shelburne. And they talked about, like, Indiana had a deal on the table where they could have been getting Gary Harris and some other stuff, and they ended up going with the Thunder deal anyway. And I think there are a lot of people who would rather have, even though Gary Harris is going to get paid and very possibly going to get a bigger contract next summer than Oladipo has right now, I think there were a lot of people who would have gone the Gary Harris way too. So sometimes there are teams who just like guys more, and I think it's unlikely, and it's also plausible that the Knicks just kind of grow to a point where they're just so soured with their relationship with Melo that they say, screw it, just get him out of here, and this is the best possible deal on the table. But you got to think that their best chance is just that the Knicks kind of just like Jeremy Grant or like Alex Abrines more than, you know, everybody else does.
Well, if you're in OKC's position, would you give up Cantor, who still helps them, especially during the regular season, Cantor, Abrines, McDermott, and Grant? I mean, does that make you better this year to get Carmelo Anthony?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, so now you run into that problem as well, right? I mean, the guy, he's making too much money. And maybe that's why, I mean, the more I think about this, the more I think that, hey, it's got to really, either the Knicks have got to be willing to take back some bad salary and just want to get rid of him, or he's just going to have to get bought out if he wants to leave.
Right. And the Knicks, at least so far, have insisted that they will not buy him out. So,
yeah, I am skeptical of that, but I think, you know, they're certainly, if you wanted to buy someone out for the best possible price, you would be insisting that you weren't going to buy them out.
Yes, that's very true. It could easily be a negotiation tactic. It could also be something that they mean, but then that they change their mind about depending on what happens this season or what happens in the future or what happens with their relationship. But it's a weird thing, man. It's amazing. Like, it's July 24th. We're recording this on Monday night right now. And, like, it's supposed to be super quiet. Like, I wrote an article about Ronnie Price, who has been a ghost in Oklahoma City for, like, 9 months. And I wrote an article about Ronnie Price yesterday. And I was like, this is how you know it's late July. The random article ideas are popping up on my Twitter feed right now for myself. And even I'm like, this is some niche stuff. And then all of a sudden, like, Melo's back in the news, and the Thunder are just, like, always in the news cycle.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and they're going to continue to be. I mean, Russell Westbrook has this extension on the table that for whatever reason, he is not signed yet. And maybe he won't sign it. Maybe he will wait and see what Paul George does. And that's every little thing. I mean, with those impending free agencies coming up, and then if they got Melo, then it would really, there'd be three of those free agencies. I mean, they could be a team that's set up to be of, you know, if not a championship contender, at least a very solid team that's going to win 50 games a year for the next 4 or 5 years after the season, or they could be, you know, just starting over from square one.
It is amazing, like the disparity that they have in the quality of their potential 2018 seasons. Like they could be a really, really good team, and they could be the worst team in the league. It is amazing how far apart those two possibilities are, and yet how completely conceivable both of them are, right?
So do we need to talk about Ronnie Price still? That was actually the original impetus podcast.
Yeah, I've been trying to get you on to talk about Ronnie Price for like, I think I G-chatted you like a month and a half ago. I was like, dude, we got to do a Ronnie Price thing. Like there has to be a Ronnie Price. It's amazing. Let's talk about Ronnie Price.
Well, did you think when you first heard the news that he had signed for 2 years at $2.5 million a year, 2.4, whatever it was, did you think it was completely insane when you first heard that, when you found out that both those years were guaranteed?
100%. To the point that I asked like a few people in the organization, I was like, because I forget who reported it. I asked a few people in the organization. I was like, you know, you always try to confirm stuff when stuff is reported. But my tone in asking this was like, I forgot that I was confirming it. I genuinely didn't believe it was accurate. I was like, is this right? This isn't right. Maybe it's like a 2 year and on the minimum or something. But this can't be the right thing, right? No, this is what happened. Yeah, let's get background on this, because I don't think we can assume that every single listener knows exactly the backstory of Ronnie Price. And if you're interested, I did write about 700 words about everything Ronnie Price related yesterday. So that came out on Sunday. It was a Monday morning's paper for us, just about the Ronnie Price debacle the Thunder are dealing with. Basically, summer 2016, the Thunder signed Ronnie Price, career journeyman, 11-year veteran at the time, always a backup point guard, except for like a three-week stretch when he was with the Lakers. But always a backup, really a third-string point guard. He's the Royal Ivy type or the Kevin Ollie type, where he's a great locker room guy and he's extremely smart and he's a high IQ guy and he'll probably be a coach one day and he'll probably be a good coach one day and he's great in the locker room. And that's why Sam Presti wanted him. The market demanded 1 year minimum contract for Ronnie Price. I mean, that's all it was. That's the quality of player that he was. And Sam Presti had tried to go after him like for a few off seasons. Like Sam Presti wanted him for a few off seasons as a third string point guard. And I think he just kind of got enamored and was just like, okay, let's do this. And it's amazing because Sam Presti is good at his job and is a smart and measured guy. And it was not a Presti-ish type of contract. And he gave him 2 years, $5 million total, 2.4 in the first year, 2.6 in the, or 2.6 in the first year, 2.4 in the second year. And the Thunder, Samaje Christen beat him out on a non-guaranteed contract during training camp. They waived Ronnie Price. They did not stretch his money for 2017-18, which means they are now paying him $2.4 million this year. And because they're in the luxury tax, they could end up paying like $6 or $7 extra million dollars because they have Ronnie Price's contract on the roster. When even if they wanted to sign him and waive him, like it's not even the issue that they gave him $2.5 million a year. The issue is that they gave him a second year, which just it didn't make any sense.
Did they sign him with cap space or the room exception?
They signed him.
They didn't. They did not use the room exception last year, I want to say.
Yeah, it was.
Or if they did, it was on him.
I think it had to be on him because they signed him after they extended Russell, right? They signed him in August.
Yes, I think that's correct. It was pretty late in the process.
Right. So I think they brought him in because they had to stay under the cap in order to renegotiate and extend Westbrook's contract. And so they were doing everything they could to stay under the cap. It was about $9 million with Westbrook's raise. So they had to stay under the cap by about that much. And then they brought in Price after with, I think it was the room exception.
Well, so in any event, they could have just said, hey, you know what? We'll offer you all of our room exception. I mean, I guess what they felt like they wanted to do is maybe hold on to that room exception. So on the buyout market, they would have a little more ammunition then. So that's probably why they didn't do that. I do think that it really, though, like the guy can't play. Like there's no evidence. He had never been even an adequate backup point guard. And I realize that the Thunder really, really value their culture. But isn't that why they already have Nick Collison on the roster? And isn't that why they have kept him around and overpaid him as well? I mean, they paid him $3 million a year when he wasn't playing at all basically for the last 3 years. So you're already doing that. Now you're going to I understand this idea of like, hey, you know what? He says he doesn't want to come to Oklahoma City. Maybe we got to give him a little more than the minimum. But if he wasn't going to come for $2 million over 1 year, then, you know, he's just not worth it. I'm sorry.
No, it's not. And now, man, they could end up having to make some kind of roster decision because of this extra Ronnie Price money. Like, they could end up, maybe they don't want to be, you know, the way the tax works for those listening, the way the tax works is it's a progressive tax. So if you're zero to 5 million over, you're going to pay $1.50 tax rate. And if you're 5 to 10 over, you pay a little bit of a higher tax rate and so on and so forth. It progresses in $5 million increments for how far over the tax you are. And if maybe they want to get down to a different tax rate, to a lower tax rate. Maybe they end up making a little bit of a bigger move and they end up having to do something a little extra in order to try to get out of the tax altogether because the $2.4 million pushes them into the tax. Like, there are certain things which are hurting. Like, it could really affect, on a more micro level, it could affect personnel decisions, but, like, it could affect a personnel decision at some point this year.
Yeah. There's nothing forcing them to do anything other than Clay Bennett wanting to reduce his luxury tax bill. But certainly, I mean, if you see them give up an asset to move Kyle Singler, right? Like, a lot of the impetus for that would probably be the fact that they have this extra $2.5 million on the books.
Yep. It's a lot. Ronnie Price, man. Ronnie Price. So, and here's the thing. It wouldn't be as bad if they did it to hold – if somebody came in, I'm trying to think of an undrafted guy or a second round guy that they could have potentially had, where it's like, okay, at least they got, if Samaje Christen were not Samaje Christen, I think it wouldn't necessarily, I mean, the second year would still be inexplicable because that's just kind of a thing that was never really warranted and the situation never called for it. But it wouldn't have been necessarily as bad if they did it for a better player. And granted, this might be hindsight because they liked Samaje and he had a good preseason and all that. But, like, the fact that they did it for someone who is basically the same player as Ronnie Price, I mean, the same type of player, stylistically the same, just like 9 years younger. I mean, and might not even be on the team next year. It's possible. I mean, if they were that adamant about keeping Christian around, then they wouldn't have pushed back his guarantee date. They would have just guaranteed him, and that's it. I mean, it's extremely possible. If Ferguson signs, then he's going to be the 16th man right now, and he's non-guaranteed through training camp. So none of it really makes sense.
Do we know what's going on with Ferguson, by the way?
So it is weird. He's the only first-round pick who hasn't signed. So the Thunder say that he hasn't gotten a clearance letter from FIBA yet. I spoke to the Adelaide 36ers, the team he played for in Australia, and they also say he hasn't gotten FIBA yet, or have FIBA clearance yet. No one has given any more details than that. I don't know why he hasn't gotten FIBA clearance yet. I don't know what the issue is. It shouldn't be an issue with the buyout. Standard buyout in those situations are $650,000 to the teams, and that should be paid for pretty easily. I don't see why there would be an issue.
Well, and there's no way he would have signed a contract that had a prohibitive buyout. The whole point of going there was that he could then come to the NBA. So I would be very surprised if that were an issue. I mean, maybe it's that the Thunder are trying to get a lower price on that. Maybe it's that they are trying to, you know, it's not really FIBA clearance and they're just trying to get him for cheaper on the rookie scale, which we haven't seen any of recently. I mean, maybe just his contract extends a little bit longer because it's Australia or something like that. But yeah, nothing really comes to mind about what the issue could be.
And the Australian League, historically, it's pretty easy, like working with FIBA and getting clearance from them. Like that I spoke to some people about this, like scouts who work with international scouting, and they all said the Australian League is usually like the easiest to deal with this stuff. And they say the hardest is usually China. So it kind of made sense. Like when the Thunder signed Norris Cole, they had a similar issue where Norris Cole couldn't get clearance for they actually signed him like 6 days before they announced the signing, because it couldn't be official until he got FIBA clearance. And it took like days for him to get FIBA clearance there. That was China, and that was still only 6 days. Granted, it was during the season, so there was more urgency and all of that stuff, but it was still like 6 days. Ferguson was drafted a month ago now. Like, it's been a month, and it's not advantageous like it used to be because of cap holds and stuff. It's not like it's advantageous for teams not to sign guys now. Like, before, you would want to hold out. You could wait to sign a guy because the cap hold might be less than 120% of the rookie scale, but now, right. Now it's not. The cap hold is 120% of the rookie scale, so it's not advantageous on the team side to wait. So it's a weird thing, right? It's just I don't know what to make of it. I've been digging, and I can tell you. I can tell you.
I trust that you would. That's what you do. So
you're gonna
call Australia. You're gonna like rack up. Collect call charges like Bart Simpson trying to call Australia.
I can tell you the Oklahoman, I'm sure they're digging too. Eric Horn wrote a piece about it today, just kind of an update saying like, here's everything we know. And this is hard. This is a really hard thing to report on because no one's really giving any details. Everyone's just saying issues with FIBA clearance. It's a weird thing.
So can I tell my most recent favorite Fred story before we depart?
You can say whatever you want.
So at Summer League, you usually get out of there about maybe like 9:30, 10 o'clock, something like that, once the last game is over. We got dinner plans. We're going to go to an all-you-can-eat sushi restaurant.
Oh, God. Okay.
And so we're in the media room. Fred's like, all right, you know, I'll be out in a second. He's like finishing up some story. Then he has to go to the bathroom. Then he comes back and he's like, all right, hold on, guys. I got to get a water. And, you know, we're like, because this place closes at 11. And I'm like, hey, if we get there late, this is all you can eat. Like, we're trying to get in there quick so we can, like, not impose on these poor people. So Fred, you know, opens up the door to the water refrigerator. They've got bottled waters in there, you know. Puts a hand onto the front row on the top shelf, kind of subtly shakes his head, moves his hand down to the front row on the second shelf, still not there. Third shelf, still no good. Fourth shelf now, he actually gets down on one knee onto the bottom row. And still, the water in question was not Fred's specifications. So he then removes, like, this is one of those fridges. I mean, it's like chock full of water. And there's like, you know, it's like six or seven deep. He removes from like the very right side all six waters and finally takes one out. I mean, this is like a 2.5 minute process as I'm like, you know, looking at my watch. And he finally gets like a water that met with his specifications.
No. Even the ones in the back, they were still warm.
Oh, so after all that, it wasn't even worth it, huh?
No, it wasn't even worth it.
Oh, that's even more infuriating than I thought.
I guess they completely ran out of water in the fridge, and there were no more cold ones. They were all warm.
Yeah, so Fred requires water to be a certain temperature, and he will make his friends wait. He will make an entire restaurant wait. As it turned out, we got there at like 10:38, and they're like, hey, last seating is at 10:40, but all was okay because we did find that they had a sister restaurant that was open until 2 in the morning for all-you-can-eat sushi on a Monday. And that is why I love Las Vegas, because there are places that serve all-you-can-eat sushi until 2 a.m. on a Monday.
I thought you were going to tell the garage story.
The garage story.
At Caesars.
I was so miserable during that time that I just like completely blacked out. Also, you're doing me a favor. So like when someone does you a favor, you can't complain. You're going to give me a ride back to my hotel. So I can't complain that like you couldn't find your car.
I didn't bring my parking ticket with me. So I had to go back to the car all the way upstairs. Then I couldn't find the car for like 15 minutes. And it was like somewhere between 1,000 and 1,000,000 degrees in that garage. Like Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah. We just had an all-you-can-eat buffet, so...
We're sounding really disgusting, by the way, because every single one of these stories...
There was some urgency to depart the premises, and still, we just ended up, like, getting stuck there for, like, 20 minutes while you were trying to find the car in the garage.
We're sounding really disgusting, by the way, considering...
Quite gluttonous.
Yeah, every single story that we have involves all-you-can-eat meal.
Those are the only two all-you-can-eat meals I had the whole time in Vegas.
I know. Me too. But those are also the only two stories we've told.
All-you-can-eat food, it lends itself to stories, I think.
Apparently. Except only when I'm like delaying the process of all-you-can-eat food, apparently. Well, you can eat. You and Danny eat so much. If people don't know what Nate looks like, Nate is like 7'3", and has like a broad shouldered frame. He's like the George Murison of basketball Twitter. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, other than you inflating my height by 9 inches, I would say so.
If George Murison looked like Jim Halpert, that's what I'll say. You got anything else you want to tell my listeners about your pod and everything else you got going on?
Yeah, just go to NateDuncanNBA.com. You can find out everything you need to. It's a daily NBA podcast. The idea is that if you listen to our show, then you're up on the national NBA news every day. We do salary cap breakdowns, game wrap-ups, draft scouting reports, pretty much anything that you could possibly be interested in about the NBA, we'd try to cover it.
And I'm gonna shout out just to the apostrophe as well, because if there were no such thing as an apostrophe, then I would think your podcast was called Dunston, and we'd have real problems. I really appreciate the Dunston.
It sounds much better. It sounds much better than it reads. Like, it's definitely like hard for people to find it because of that sorry apostrophe. But yeah, if Dunst weren't a word, then I could have just called it Dunked On with a C, and we would be fine. But I wouldn't want anybody to get dunced on.
If I search in like iTunes, if I search it just without the apostrophe, is it findable?
Let's see.
Experimentation. This, Nathaniel. This is podcasting. This is great.
This is a great radio. Nope, you can't find it.
There you go. So remember the apostrophe. D-U-N-C.
Yeah, a lot of dance results.
There we go.
Yeah, the audiobook When We Danced on Water by Evan Fallenberg is a prominent search result.
We Ronnie Price has driven us to complete delirium.
Well, at least the people who, like, we got the good out of the way early, the mellow. Like, now, then we got to Ronnie Price and it began to degenerate. And, like, anyone who's not, doesn't find us charming would have turn this off long ago.
That's true. Nobody cares anymore. If you haven't decided that this podcast is just a horrible one, you can remember that I'm on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and I'll be back on Thursday. And you can listen to that one too, because that'll be on the internet or the podcast apps or wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can listen to it there. You can head on to iTunes to subscribe also. And like I said at the top, the reviews are really helpful. If you are feeling really nice and you want to take a minute of your time and leave a review, not even a minute.
If you only listen to the first 20 minutes of this and you'd like to leave a review.
Yeah, I really appreciate the Melo and the Ronnie Price analysis, but I don't understand what happened in the last 10 minutes of the podcast. If you have questions, comments, lockdownthunder@gmail.com, you can send them there. You can tell me just how awful I am at my job on Twitter @FredKatz, FREDKATZ. And Nate, give him your Twitter too.
Nate Duncan, NBA.
Nate, like, never tweets. So. Nate is an avid tweeter. Nate and Matt Moore. I think you and Matt Moore are my top two. Like, the people who tweet the most, the people who I follow.
Yeah, I still have, like, way more tweets than followers. Like, it's not even close and embarrassing.
I think most people have more tweets than followers.
Do they?
I feel like
Woj definitely doesn't.
Yeah, but he has like millions of followers probably. I definitely have way more tweets than followers. So that's okay.
Yeah.
I probably have
times. 83,000 tweets right now.
You know, that is less than I would have guessed. I would have guessed more. Matt Moore has like hundreds of thousands of tweets.
He's been around longer though.
And but Matt Moore deletes tweets though.
Huh.
So like he'll delete some stuff every once in a while. And he's still, I mean, he just, every time I check my timeline, I'm like, oh, there's Matt. He's tweeting about something now. It's great. He's always, I mean, he's so locked into Twitter. It's amazing. You can check out my stuff. You can get the links on Twitter, or you can just go straight to normantranscript.com. All your Thunder needs there. So Thunder off-season coverage. I'll have some features coming out this week. I'm going to have a piece about Russ sharing the ball. I'm going to have a piece about the extension stuff that we kind of talked about, just kind of giving an update on where Westbrook is, where the Thunder are in that process. And I'm going to have more features and that kind of stuff coming up over the summer. That is going to do it for today. Nate, thanks for coming on, man.
My pleasure.
I appreciate it. Until Thursday, Locked on Thunder is locking up.